When a windstorm strikes, the insurance companies call it an act of God. Is that merely a figure of speech? After all, God is love. Therefore, God would not kill and injure people with hurricanes and tornadoes. Yet, despite this seeming contradiction in our view of God's nature, we are now experiencing a remarkable increase in the frequency and the severity of windstorms of all kinds. Along with this increase in windstorms, we are seeing an increase in the frequency and severity of rainstorms and floods. To understand what is causing this wild, violent weather, we first have to understand the jet stream, which is the flow of air that constantly circles around the globe. The jet stream is a continuous loop of air swirling eastward, horizontally cycling the globe. Lately, there has emerged a mysterious force, swooping down from the northern hemisphere, periodically yanking the jet stream off of its smooth easterly course and causing the jet stream to repeatedly drop troughs of Canadian air masses southward across the northern hemisphere. On the map, the outline of these multiple troughs is shaped like the letter W across the United States. Frigid northern air is rapidly pulled southward to collide sharply and explosively into existing warm air masses. Within the vertex of two U-shaped troughs, warm air is sucked up from the south. It's like pouring cold water into a hot frying pan. The result is all sorts of bizarre and violent weather reactions. Lightning storms, torrential rainstorms with consequent flooding, windstorms, tornadoes, and hurricanes, temperatures swinging wildly from warm to cold and cold to warm in one day or less. What is the genesis of this mysterious force pushing down from the northern hemisphere, causing the jet stream to ripple south and north like the cracking of a bullwhip? Each week on this program, Planet X in Bible Prophecy, we will explore beyond the Earth's stratosphere to discover the cause of these perilous weather phenomena and the earth-shaking geological phenomena that accompanies these windstorms, lightning storms, rainstorms, and yo-yo-like temperature swings.
Great storms come. They cover all towns. Summer and winter all mix up.
Floods, earthquakes, Mother Earth rising in revolt.
And flood watches abound across the western Great Lakes. Chicago, Milwaukee under a flood watch. It's not going to take much more rain, and it is in the forecast, to cause flooding, some overrunning of streams and creeks. But I-35 out of Minneapolis, potentially rough today, especially as we go into this afternoon. As you may have heard, we had 70 reports of tornadoes yesterday. More twisters possible today across parts of the Midwest. Nebraska and Iowa were hit particularly hard. As we travel along I-80, it's not advised today, especially in the afternoon, we could see more wetness. And in the southeastern part of Nebraska, around Fairfield, we had a train turned over, from what I understand. And so we could see some more rough weather later in the Corn Belt. Weather.com/travel for more travel and weather information. So we'll be keeping an eye. Back to you, Bill and Matt.
All right. Thank you very much, Bob. All that hail you spoke about in the Corn Belt, not good for our crops out there, right?
Yeah, sure. Knocking down some of that corn out in eastern Nebraska, western Iowa, Kelly. And what was that? 106-mile-per-hour wind in St. Charles, Iowa. Just amazing stuff. All right, your planting calendar looking like this, folks. Hopefully your Cash crops are subterranean today up in Montana. The potatoes will be, but the lettuce hopefully is not coming out of the ground just yet because it's snowing. It is snowing above 4,000 feet in Montana. Strawberry crops should be pretty safe now from North Dakota to Michigan. Destructive tornadoes and severe weather will continue today. This incredible twister had jaws dropping in Furnace County, Nebraska yesterday. Details are next.
And thunderstorms are going to roll into New York City later today. Will they turn severe? The latest on all the rough weather is straight ahead.
I'm Bill Keneally.
And I'm Kelly Cass. Thanks so much for joining us. Well, a heartbreaking story continues to unfold this morning in the nation's heartland, which was hard hit by a staggering number of tornadoes yesterday.
So far, it looks like 70, a last word, Kelly, and towns have been demolished, and some people have lost everything they own, and there were lots of very terrifying moments.
We have debris in the air. Go fast! You gotta go or we're gonna die. I'm not joking.
This frightening tornado was one of three spotted yesterday in Furnace County, Nebraska. Our severe weather expert, Dr. Greg Forbes, says yesterday was the biggest tornado outbreak since May of last year. At this point, we have not received any reports of deaths or injuries. Since Friday, there have been more than 800 different reports of severe weather. And with more rough weather expected through the middle of next week, we'll likely add to those numbers. Now here's Bill with the latest on the Midwest.
Kelly, the governor of Iowa says we'll take weeks and months to rebuild what a tornado destroyed in just about 60 seconds. A tornado last week leveling the town of Bradgate, Iowa, leaving 30 of the town's 40 homes uninhabitable, I should say. And more storms are in the forecast today, which will further hamper the cleanup operations.
So we have just recently returned from the Middle East, you know, where we had a film crew, where we are reviewing some of the world's most ancient documents in order to uncover what the ancients say is going to happen. And we have a striking number of similarities between the model that we have created and these ancient texts that say what is the sequence of events that will happen. In fact, it is so uncanny you could practically lay them beside each other. Ours is a lot more detailed of what will happen to the Earth and solar system as it moves through the galactic plane. But basically, all the key points are identical. One of the last things as we move through the solar system is what you just referred to as wormwood. One of the texts, Revelations, describes a huge meteorite, one of the last events, which would hit the planet, and its name would be Wormwood. Shortly after that event, let me step back and show you a brief example of the model we have of the Earth to show you how it correlates with what's happening today. What we have is a model of what would happen to our planet and the solar system as it's moving through the galactic plane. And remember, it's already about halfway through it. The worst is yet to come. The very first effect we would see is that the Earth's temperature would increase slightly under the oceans, very slightly, just about 0.2, 0.3 degrees Celsius. This would raise the temperature level of the oceans at the base of the oceans very slightly. This has already happened. And this is caused because the crust, the outside hard shell of the planet, is floating on a molten, more liquid fluid type hot layer. As we approach the galactic plane and the spin of the Earth is at an angle with respect to that plane, the gravitational field of the plane pulls on the axis of the Earth. That pulls the crust away around the mantle, causing friction between the mantle and the crust. That heats up the bottom of the ocean slightly. That has already happened. The first effect you're going to see is weather anomalies all over the planet, the globe, because the oceans create a tremendous amount of weather patterns. And since I was on the show last, in 2006, we have had more weather anomalies than we've had in the last 100 years. For example, last year, we had a report that summation by the U.S. Geological Society and NOAA that 2007 was the weirdest weather year on record, where we had tornadoes hit New York City, Iran, Oman. We had the first snowfall in Baghdad in 100 years.
And they keep getting stranger
they
every year.
They get worse. Oh, this year, we had the worst snowfall in the Midwest in 98 years. Afghan suffers the worst winter in 30 years. 2 weeks ago, we had over a dozen tornadoes hit the United States.
Let me let you finish that thought, Brent, when we come right back. We'll also talk about prophecy. Oh, yes, prophecy. On Coast to Coast AM.
And, well, this is all related to the heating of the Earth's core. The molten core is heating up, and it's due to the magnetic influences of these incoming celestial bodies. When the magnetic, when the magma within the Earth's core heats up, the mantle, which is out closer to the surface than the core,
right.
It's the next layer up from the core, the outer core, to the mantle, and then above the mantle, there is the crust. The mantle is somewhat viscous, very thick molten, and very thick molten rock, and that begins to heat up and begins to liquefy, become less viscous, more flowing, more liquid, as it heats up due to the magnetic heating effect of these surrounding celestial bodies. As a result,
Go ahead, John. Let me finish your thought.
Oh, as a result, I've been reading a book on geology, and when this happens, this book tells me that there are mantle plumes, like columns of molten magma, and also gases that come up through these columns. It's almost like a lava lamp. You see a lava lamp, these columns of lava coming upward, and that's what comes close to the surface, but it hits and stops at the... It's blocked at the lithosphere, which is the crustal surface that forms the seabed of the Gulf of Mexico. And it just seems to me that this is a theory, because I'm not a geologist, but it seems we're getting bulging of the seabed right now. And I like to know why we're not getting buoy measurements, because buoys are placed in all the oceans and seas in order to monitor the conditions such as temperature, depth, etc. Now, if we had buoy measurements, we would know what the depth is, and we would see the depth changes as a result of any buckling, bulging, or sinking of the seabed. But we're not being told that. I'd like to find out why we can't get buoy readings to see what's happening to that seabed.
Well, I'm assuming, and because, you know, if nothing else, a holdover from the Cold War, that they're taking the measurements, because the United States had the greatest a technological array of sonobuoys in existence, measuring the seafloor so they could detect Soviet submarines. So I know the technology is there. They claim they don't have enough money, but, you know, there's so many black budget items, we don't know what they can afford to do. Now, you were talking about the molten core heating up due to magnetic fluxes. And for our listeners out there, John gave a very good description of how the Earth is formed. If you think of it as an egg, the core would be the egg yolk, the mantle would be the egg white, and the crust, the part that we live on, would be the egg shell. And it's very thin for a reason. Because a lot of stuff, as John points out, can come up through the crust. That's why we have the volcanic activity that we have. And these volcanoes can be pretty nasty at times. Dudes of history, remember what happened at Mount Vesuvius, and Mount Etna and all those places. And, you know, we know what happened to Pompeii. So, John, let me redirect you back to the cosmology aspect. Now, you're talking about outside bodies influencing the heating up of the core through magnetic flux. Now, you've written some about Planet X. Now, I was kind of out in the dark about Planet X until I started looking into it when I knew you were coming on. So we're talking about a huge astral body, maybe not a planet, maybe a comet, that the scientists aren't telling us about, but may possibly be having an influence on the shape of the crust, the plate tectonics that keep the oceans and continents from crashing into each other and all that. So tell us a little bit more about the Planet X theory.
Okay, well, there's so much to say, I'll have to abbreviate a lot of the evidence. There are two, going back several decades, two of the largest news publications in the United States announced that Planet X exists and that Planet X had been discovered. The first announcement came from the New York Times, January 30th, 1983, and this was prior to the launching, the joint launching between the U.S. and the Netherlands of the Infrared Astronomical Satellite, IRAS. It had infrared eyes. It was designed to go into polar orbit and search for Planet X. In fact, that was the stated purpose of this satellite space telescope launch, was to search for Planet X. The title of the lengthy article in the New York Times, and I have went to my library, I actually got the microfilm, photocopied the microfilm copy, and I have a pretty clear copy of the actual article. I sent it to Marshall Masters, and he put it on his website. So if somebody, people just do an internet search on these two words, YOWUSA.com, that's his website, YOWUSA.com, and the words, three words, New York Times. You'll come up with that article. And in the article, you just click on, it's embedded in Marshall Masters' commentary about debunking people who try to debunk Planet X. And the, in the article, the article reads, I'm just going to give you the first couple lines for abbreviation, to abbreviate this. And the title of the article from the New York Times, January 30th, 1983, is Clues Get Warm in the Search for Planet X. And just paraphrasing the first two sentences by John Noble Wilford, staff writer for the New York Times, quote, something out there beyond the farthest reaches of the known solar system is tugging at the outer planets, Uranus and Neptune, causing irregularities in their orbits. This gravitational force suggests the presence of a huge, unseen body, the long-sought Planet X. And then it goes into detail explaining the long history where, when Uranus was discovered in 1781, imagine that, 1781, 230 years ago, even then they noticed perturbations or a plucking of that planet out of its orbit at one particular point in its orbit. So they automatically knew, even at that early stage of the field of astronomy with the unsophisticated telescopes that they had in and the unsophisticated knowledge of astronomy that they had back then, they all of them knew that there must be a massive gravitational body, a body that could exert such force that it would actually pluck these planets out of their orbits. Imagine how far away Planet X must have been in 1781 if it took 200 years to get to our solar system. It was so far away, and therefore it's mass must be incredible.
This is how the powers that be that are in the know are dealing with this information. Sometimes it slips out, and then they do their best to try to cover their tracks afterwards.
So where is the government in all of this? Aren't they supposed to protect us? We're the taxpayers. They have a defense department that's supposed to defend us. Why hasn't the government notified us that these terrible times are coming? Well, imagine if you were in their shoes. What would you say to people? We're not going to be able to feed you. We're not going to be able to protect you. masses of people will die, but please pay your taxes anyway. They don't tell you because they don't have a plan. They also don't want to create panic. Up until the last minute, when they're sure this is going to happen and that nothing can be done, they don't want to be the cause of panic. Bank failures, people failing to go to their jobs, industry grinding to a halt. They feel that at least now things are rolling and the wheels of commerce and the like are continuing. So basically, they just don't know how to tell you. It's terrible news. They have no solution. They don't want to cause panic. So paralysis sets in and nothing is said.
Is it not possible that the government does know more than they are telling us, with theories such as Roswell and aliens visiting us, that there could also be threats from outside our solar system, which we're now being made aware of subtly, like through the movies and media like Deep Impact or Armageddon, or NASA releasing information saying that an asteroid could whack us in 2028 or thereabouts? It's making the public privy to this information so that they have a case history of events to desensitize us to this information, so that when instantly there is something new in the skies or in the heavens, we're not freaking out.
There is an object right now moving into our solar system, and this information is being kept from the public. The astronomy community is not going to tell you about impending disaster. In fact, they're under direct orders not to tell you. We know there's tremendous equipment that has the ability to observe this object. In fact, an entire entourage of objects coming into our solar system.
From sources within the U.S. government that tell me that yes, they are deeply concerned about it and they're worried sick about it and they don't know what to do about it. What could the government or anyone else tell you? What could they say to you?
Had to prepare for it, but keep it out of the public's understanding. Otherwise, there would be panic everywhere. Astronomers are so certain of this planet's existence that they've already named it Planet X. Why have we never been able to see a direct transmission from the Hubble telescope? They're blacked out. Nobody can receive a direct transmission, not over satellite. NASA will never put it on because they're watching. They know something is coming. They've spotted it.
The greatest catastrophe in human history is unfolding in front of us. It's a huge crisis, and it's systemic, and it's not going to go away. It's going to get worse and worse. For the first time in recorded astronomical history, the sun lost its magnetic field, its heliosphere.
Well, you know, one of the things that a lot of people have factored a lot of this into is do they know something about a comet, asteroid, massive body that's going to be swinging by close. And there's certainly a lot of talk about Planet X for a while there, and then it kind of faded out because, you know, people make predictions and things like that. If there is a Planet X or Wormwood, that it would be coming by on a regular basis in great floods throughout history, which are mentioned in every creation story of every single community of indigenous people, folks who have never read the Bible. So obviously there is some memory of this. Our government or governments friendly to the United States control access to every observatory substantial in size and power enough to be able to see these things that might be coming from a distance, indicating, of course, the clampdown on panic. What much sense does it make in the event of massive global flooding to build an underground shelter?
Converging on the fact that a global disaster will occur very soon. It's a recurring disaster. See, what has happened is that when this planet passes by, it has a tremendous magnetic field. If it comes close enough, which could be as close as 15 million miles, which is considered really, really close. Gravitational fields of Planet X or one of its thousands of surrounding comets also. The magnetic field of that passing space body will lock up magnetically and also gravitationally with Earth.
NASA know?
They know that Wormwood is headed this way. They know that there's not a darn thing they can do about it, and they're scared spitless. Wormwood is packing a major, major methane atmosphere. It comes in contact with the atmosphere of the Earth. You've got the Earth supplying oxygen. And then Wormwood throws these little pellets of iron oxide dust that glow red hot, and fire literally rains down on the Earth from the sky. One third of the Earth will be incinerated.
Could this be one reason why so many governments are building underground bunkers, some say cities, for their own chosen few?
Yes, isn't that interesting that the governments of the world are building massive underground complexes? Here in the United States, we've got them where, right out here in California, China Lake, and up in Utah, we've got
Area
51.
And I still think there's something under the Denver airport.
And a massive, huge complex under the Denver airport. And by the way, Denver connects to these other places underground.
They're creating a seed bank.
Oh, yeah. Massively in Russia and also massively in Israel. You know, there's some places where there's massive tunnel complexes that are being dug to protect the politicians, you know, make the world safe for lawyers, and just let everybody else burn.
The day of the explosion at the oil spill rig, there was a huge eruption on the sun, and there is some speculation that the oil spill and the explosion on the rig might have been an under-ocean volcanic reaction. There's some evidence, and there's a case building for that. The idea of drilling, you know, for oil on the back of a volcanic hot zone. In fact, National Geographic has confirmed, and I found proof there, that in the Gulf of Mexico there are active volcanoes underneath that region. So you're drilling into an active region. Which
in the early 1980s, and I've known about this for a little while, the Washington Post report on this, but you found a lot of other reports in addition to the Washington Post report and a few others about this potential 10th planet or some sort of mystery object.
December 81, Astronomy Magazine launched a article called Search for the Tenth Planet.
It is a brown dwarf star. It is either a small star or it is a big planet.
Sheldon mentioned this telescope they're putting up in the South Pole. What do you suppose they're looking for?
Well, they're looking for the 10th planet. It's not that they're looking for it, they're tracking it.
They're tracking it, okay.
Because they found it in 1979 with the Pioneer 10 space probe.
NASA, about a year ago, had a study that said that the sun's activity appears to be directly related now to climate change. Yet, it really didn't receive much publicity. How come?
Well, when I talked to David Hathaway at the NASA Solar Observatory before all of these disasters happened, I asked him that same question. And he said, we think there could be a connection to weather. He did not say earthquake. But they really didn't want to publicize anything about it.
The International Space Station, they sent, the mass media reported that something like 45 tons of equipment has been launched up to the International Space Station for repairs. That's an obvious phony report. I believe that what they're doing is sending up, expanding the International Space Station to accommodate some of the power elite up there during the times when it will be safe. I think they're going to have to, they probably are smart enough and have enough technology to know that you cannot stay up in the International Space Station during dangerous times when there's severe lightning and electrical discharges from Planet X.
That will flood miles inland in the continental United States, Canada, possibly elsewhere around the world. We're talking a flood of biblical proportions. Government agencies are aware of this. They've shared this with certain personnel. The U.S. Navy has apparently shared this with their service people. And there are apparently safe havens. The U.S. Government has been very busy constructing huge underground bases, if you will, in order to preserve government operations to some degree.
Now, what these men were told in these classified briefings is that, quote-unquote, during your lifetimes, not your children's or your grandchildren's, during your lifetimes, we will have violently rising ocean levels to new levels. Violent, abrupt climate change. One of the known safe havens is the Arkansas-Missouri Ozarks.
John, I would like to mention that I think we should begin to warn our audience that they should start really thinking about and working together with us in preparing for solar storms that I suspect and many other people suspect are going to be occurring this year or next year. Solar storms that could be so severe that two major catastrophes will result. One would be the destruction of our power grids, and that would throw us back into a primitive lifestyle. We would have, we would be overnight forced into, ancient ways of living. We've got a lot of evidence to indicate that these solar storms are coming soon. We could talk about Planet X and how it is exciting the sun and beginning to excite the sun. After its this two-year lull in solar activity, which I believe was due to Planet X passing below Jupiter, and Planet X and its hordes of surrounding comets interacting electrically with Jupiter, drawing electrical fire away from the sun and toward Jupiter, but that was just a temporary lull before the storm. Now we can expect solar blasting. How are we going to prepare to live without power? Number two, how are we going to prepare to live when we are being blasted by the sun with temperatures scorching, burning up, people dying on the surface of the earth from the intense solar blasting?
If my interpretations are correct, and I believe they are, this will be the worst earthquake our world has ever experienced.
The biblical prophecies are frightening, and to some, difficult to take seriously. After all, we have never experienced a worldwide earthquake. But suppose the prophecies are true. What could trigger such an event? Perhaps the Anasazi had the answer. They and many other peoples had an almost religious obsession with the planets. They charted the heavens with uncanny accuracy, an accuracy that has only recently been surpassed. But why? Why would such a people, barely able to scratch a subsistence out of this harsh land, be so preoccupied with the planets? Did the Anasazi know something about the planets that we are only beginning to understand?
For many peoples, these were the first gods. The fleet Mercury, the messenger. Venus, the goddess of beauty. Mars, the great warrior. The greatest of the deities, the king of all gods, Jupiter. 1,300 times the size of Earth, a seething cauldron of ammonia and methane charged by electrical storms, rotating at enormous speed, its equator bulging from the stress. Jupiter, so big, its mass is almost that of a star. So powerful, its immense gravitational and magnetic fields affect other astral bodies millions of miles away. Because of these fields, this giant planet, the king of ancient gods, may still hold dominion over the Earth.
This mathematician has conducted an extensive study of Casa Rinconada.
The reason why they were so much interested in those planets is because they had noticed that every time something happened on the surface of the Earth, like earthquakes, volcanic eruptions, or tidal waves, it was always connected. It was synchronized with planetary conjunctions. So they wanted to try to calculate in advance when it would happen again.
If Chatelaine is correct in his analysis, the Anasazi knew of a link between natural disasters on Earth and the positions of the planets.
That's affirmative. We're go.
Roger. Roger, you're standing by, Frank.
Okay, TP, let's go. We have confirmation of pitch and roll program.
What's your liftoff time, Retro?
This link between Jupiter, the other planets, and our Earth is just beginning to attract the attention of modern science, and for good reason. On Christmas Eve, 1982, we experienced a rare phenomenon. A conjunction of planets like those for which the Anasazi calculator was designed. Astronomers call it the Grand Alignment, and it is a subject of growing controversy and concern. There are a number of reputable scientists who believe this Grand Alignment could trigger worldwide devastation, ushering our planet into a 20-year era of cataclysm. Is this really possible? Could planets millions of miles away have such an effect on our Earth?
Our scientists have recently come aware of what they call extrasolar planets or traveling planets, brown dwarfs that are suns that are too small to really light but kind of smolder and emit their own light. Sometimes they're called wandering planets or wanderers. Most suns are binaries. Our sun is a binary. Our sun's twin never lit. It is a dark, dead sun in a fixed position in space, as our sun is a fixed position in space. This particular large planet, which travels and comes in over only every 3,657 years, is orbiting both the suns, where the rest of the planets in our solar system are orbiting only the one sun. That's why it comes into our solar system only every 3,657 years and is gone for a long time.
We have to be prepared for what's coming because it's going to be a lot different than what you can expect. And you could even have in the northern hemispheres with increased rainfall, as Robert Felix has said, you could have an ice age in the far north. At the same time, you could have an increase in the temperate and warmer zones of the Earth and major shifts in the populations of the planet caused by this. And they're not telling you a darn thing because they want to keep you in the dark like mushrooms and manipulate and control you while they plan to kill you with vaccines, weaponized food, every other possible thing, including electropollution. And they're not doing a thing to tell you the truth about what's going on. But we are. We're going to tell you today. So, John, let's continue with some quotes. You have some remarkable quotes there, please.
Okay. Now we have a flavor for this incoming object that is traveling in from the distant sun toward our sun. And here's solid, irrefutable evidence from the United States government, that the National Aeronautics and Space Administration, before there was a suppression of all this information by the power elite. We're going back a quarter of a century now. I have in front of me the New York Times, June 19, 1982. I'm going to read you this brief article. A pair of American spacecraft may help scientists detect what could be a 10th planet or a giant object billions of miles away, the National Aeronautics and Space Administration said Thursday. Scientists at the space agency's Ames Research Center said the two spacecraft, Pioneers 10 and 11, which are already farther into space than any other man-made objects, might add to knowledge of a mysterious object believed to be beyond the solar system's outermost known planets. The space agency said that persistent irregularities in the orbits of Uranus and Neptune suggest some kind of mystery object is really there, with its distance depending on what it is. If the mystery object is a new planet, it may lie 5 billion miles beyond the outer orbital ring of known planets, the space agency said. If it is a dark star type of object, it may be 50 billion miles beyond the known planets.
There seems to be some serious observation going on in the southern hemisphere and leaks coming out all over the place. It does appear that groups of military and professional astronomers are openly active, let's say, at the Wormwood location in Australia. Well, of course, that's what I've been saying all along. The indicators were all there. And now there are reports that a mini solar system is coming into ours. Basically, you are on your own. Be prepared. That's the best thing I can tell you. And as far as, well, I would suggest that, number one, you need clean water. Number two, you need your own supply of food. And number three, you need some basic first aid equipment. Number four, you need some health maintenance natural products. And my own use on this, I use essential oils. Years, as I've advised people through this era of awaiting a extrasolar system object, and by the way, there are many of them, there is not just one. This is what scientists are starting to find out, and of course, they're not telling the public. And it does appear, and I've been saying this all along, it now appears that there are leaks, excuse me, coming out of the southern hemisphere of the number of astronomers down there looking at what they are calling a mini solar system moving into ours. This is what apparently Harrington saw back in the early 90s, and in the forefront was, of course, Hale-Bopp, but the comet nucleus that eventually became Hale-Bopp, somewhat of a mini solar system in its own right, but certainly much smaller than the much bigger object coming in behind it. And this would be coming in from the southern hemisphere. The point is, forget about dates. As I said last week and the week before, don't worry about dates. Or don't worry about internet chatter. Don't think you're going to all of a sudden wake up someday and hear on the evening news that, gee, a big object is coming in and here's the date it's going to be here, folks. That is not going to happen. That's not going to happen on the evening news. My advice is simply to be prepared. If you are not prepared, then what are you thinking about? Are you, you know, and the other thing is, I'm not preaching for people to get prepared because some people don't want to. I have a friend who said, I want to go up to my roof, put a big X on it, paint a big X on my roof, and if something comes in, I want to say, hit here first. That's what one of my friends says. So not everybody wants to be prepared. Not everybody wants to go through the rigors of living through a very difficult time and try and come out the other end when the success rate is going to be very low. So at any rate, but man is a survivor. He's historically been a survivor. The fact that we are here today is a testament to the fact that man has been a survivor. Our space dollars are being completely diverted into little private, very exclusive space programs of the elite. They're not going to share it with you. They're not going to share their cave systems with you. The question that comes out of this, and which is imperative right now, understanding that we are in a time of celestial change in the solar system, a time of when upheaval and severe change, not just average change, but severe change with our sun, with our weather, with the local solar environment of Earth and the other planets, is potentially going to change radically. How can the people in power, supposedly, that are in the positions of federal, state, and in many cases local government, how can they possibly even cope with this when there has been absolutely no planning done for the general public? And the crisis that they propose to prevent by not telling the public is actually going to be 100 times worse once the public gets the drift of what's going on. The cities, the destruction and the looting, the just the complete destruction of our cities is going to happen internally. you wouldn't have to bring an army in here because the cities will self-destruct on their own. People have not been taught a little thing called personal responsibility, how to take care of yourself and your neighbor and make the best out of a bad situation. Everybody has everything handed to them. Everything is easy. You simply go to the mall with your credit card and everything's taken care of. When all of that changes, I call it the 95% rule. 95% of the public is going to wake up one day with nothing. And the real survivors are going to find a way to deal with all of these situations. And it's not going to be, it won't take long, it's not going to be pretty. But when these major events happen, it's going to happen very quickly. One thing we found out from Comet Bradfield is that these objects, of course, NASA sees them coming from a long time out, from a long distance away, but the public is going to have a week or two or three notice, is my prediction. And that's all. Because we don't have the ability to get to the locations to observe what they are observing and not telling us about. It's a very difficult thing. I've personally tried it myself. And really, once again, especially in the time frame we're in right now, the May time frame in June, these, of course, are the times that Harrington said were the observing times for those southern locations. So isn't it interesting that in the month of May and June, Australia has all of a sudden become extremely active with astronomers and military types hanging around the Project Wormwood facility in Australia. Now, I'm running out of time here, so I just want to recap what we might see as people on Earth. We may see large numbers of comets. We may see other planets capturing comets. We may see new moons evolving around other planets. We may see planets encountering medium or small or large comets with devastating results. We may see comets coming close to Earth with devastating results. We may be hit by meteors or many more meteors than we do, and of course this has been happening already. In the past year, many, many bolide type objects coming in and striking Earth. At any rate, I'm out of time here. The things that we would expect are happening. They're coming in from the south. I don't have a time frame. I do not put time frames on these type of events unless I have sound data, and I'm working on getting sound data. That's all I have to say this week. Be prepared. Good night. This is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour, and we are definitely at the crossroads. Good night.
Live from the Weather Channel, this is Weather Center.
Light in this surveillance video from Washington State is under investigation. The National Weather Service ruled out all weather-related reasons for this flash. Military officials believe a meteor may have shattered as it passed through the atmosphere. Welcome back to the Weather Channel Evening Edition. I'm Dave Schwartz.
Some consider the ancient Mayan calendar the most accurate ever devised. And unlike ours, which concentrates on holidays and phases of the moon from here to eternity, the Mayan calendar has a final date. December the 21st in the year 2012. A day that just might be the last day of our world.
Could this be why we come onto the scene in Genesis chapter 1 with an earth that lay in ruin, toho and boho, and it was desolate, And then God had to restore the earth because something had come through our solar system, and they described it in Egypt and in Greece as a great comet. But was it a comet? They said it came. People saw it. They wrote it. They recorded what happened and the results to the land, to the people, to the cattle, to agriculture as a direct result of it. God completed the restoration of planet Earth and told man to multiply and replenish. Anybody can go to the Strong's Concordance and look up the word replenish, and you will see that it says it means to repopulate the earth. Apparently, there was some kind of population on planet Earth before Genesis 1, when God came on the scene and it was laying, the earth was in ruins. And now, all of a sudden, God started things and restored it all over again. Well, what did he say in Acts 3, verse 18 to 21? He said when Jesus comes and the heavens are holding him, and when he comes, he will have to restore all things. Restore it from what kind of a condition? Well, it's already said if he didn't intervene, there would no flesh be saved alive, so something pretty devastating is going to happen to planet Earth, and inhabitants of this earth is going to know about it. They're going to see it because they're going to keel over with heart attacks. They're going to hold their stomach, men, as if they were delivering babies. Could this shifting of our planet's rotation and the accompanying geophysical changes to Earth have been ultimately triggered by the passage of this terrible red comet?
I'm John DiNardo for Planet X in Bible Prophecy. Your help is needed to warn of disastrous windstorms and floods, catastrophic earthquakes and volcanic eruptions, which God is bringing upon the world in order to shock people to open their hearts to God, our Savior, Yahshua Jesus. Please write to me at Planet X, P.O. Box 422, Towaco, T-O-W-A-C-O, New Jersey, 07082. I would be happy to hear from you. Planet X, P.O. Box 422, Towaco, T as in Tom, O-W-A-C-O, New Jersey, 07082.